The death of Whitney Houston on Saturday triggered an outpouring of grief and an examination of her life. More than anyone before or since, Houston took her gospel roots to phenomenal success in R&B and pop music. She dominated the pop charts in the 80s and 90s and inspired a generation of stars, Mariah Carey, Christina Aguilera, and Jennifer Hudson, among many others. As she got older, though, her life became tabloid fodder for her rocky relationship with Bobby Brown, her stint on reality TV, her drug abuse, and now her death. So we want to hear from you, especially singers and performers. What should we learn from the life of Whitney Houston? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Michael Baker was Whitney Houston's musical director for nearly two decades and toured the world with her, and he joins us by Skype from Los Angeles today. Thanks for joining us. We're sorry for your loss.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you very much.
I know you started working with Whitney in 1994, and, well, it seemed like a force of nature back then.
Well, you know, when I started with Whitney, I started off as her drummer. I was called by a good friend named Ricky Miner, who was then the music director. He called me and he said, "Come check it out. Come check out the show." And I did. And I was chosen from among about five other drummers, and I started off as her drummer.
And what was it? You're just a member of the band back then, but obviously...
I was just a member of the band, right?
Just a member of the band. But yeah. As clearly as you came to work much more closely with her.
Yeah, I, you know, over a period of years of working just as her drummer, I had the opportunity to kind of sit back and watch the goings on of the production. Watching things going on backstage, watching the computer operator, and watching Ricky, what he was doing and how he ran the band and all that sort of thing. And later on, a few years down the road, he asked me to become music director, and I gladly turned him down. I turned him down and said, "No, I'm not a music director. That's not what I'm good at." And he said, "Michael, think about it for a couple of weeks, and I'm going to call you back." And he called me back after a couple of weeks, and he said, "Well, have you thought about that music directing job with Whitney?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I'll try it. I've never done anything like that before, and so I'll give it a whirl." And that's how it started. With me as a music director.
These are enormous productions, these big arena shows and that sort of thing. So these are very complicated logistically and technically.
Yes, they are.
But one thing in particular, you've got to work with a star. We read of her being a diva. What was she like to, work with?
Well, I tell you, I'm sad that under these circumstances, I have to do an interview about her. Obviously there's terrible circumstances for, you know, her family first, and also for me and all the friends and all the people who used to work with her and played with her, and musicians and also the fans out there in the world. It's a terrible, terrible time, but it's also a great time for, you know, I would like to be the one to, at least one of the people to dispel some of the rumors that people, you know, think about her, because she was not necessarily a diva, so to speak, or in a negative sense. She was not like that. She was a very, very giving and loving person. And I don't say that to protect her reputation. I'm saying that as a person who have worked with her for 18 years. And I'll tell you who Whitney was. I remember one time we were in Japan, and I wasn't music director at that time. And we were in Japan, we were playing at the Tokyo Dome, and she's standing in front of a crowd of about 40,000 people. And I started playing the wrong song on the drums. And the music director looks up at me, and I'm on an 8-foot riser, and I can't tell what he's saying. He's telling me it's the wrong song. And I go in again, and I start playing the wrong song again. And that's, so this is the second time. And then Whitney's standing out there in front, and she's standing out there beautiful in a gown, and she's doing, you know. And then I started off again. Everybody's telling me it's the wrong song. and I keep going into the wrong song. So that's the third time. And then she looks around at me, and she looks up at the stage, and she said, "You play them drums good, boy." She said, "You play those drums." And, you know, that's who she was. She just smiled at me, and she said, "You go ahead and play." And it was like she never, ever said one thing about it after the show. She never said, "Hey, Michael, you came in with the wrong song," or anything. Mm-hmm. She was a true pro. She was not insecure about her own singing abilities. She was not insecure about herself as far as performance, being on that stage, and she liked you to play. And she was not, she was not a wind-up doll. You know, she was definitely the real deal. And we all had a lot of fun playing with her, always.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation. Matthew Garrison played bass for Whitney Houston in her 2009 tour. His
yes.
father, Jimmy Garrison, played bass for John Coltrane. He joins us now
That's
from
right.
our bureau
That's
in
right.
New York. Again, Matthew Garrison, I know you did not know her, not among her intimates, but clearly we're sorry for your loss.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And, you know, again, actually, as when I was first contacted by NPR, one of the first people that came to mind, obviously, was Mike Baker, because I actually would not have been on the stage with Whitney if it hadn't been for Mike, and because he pulled me into the, you know, to this particular tour that you brought up. And, you know, it's obviously, it was just very shocking information to hear about this, sure. you know, this tragedy.
You knew her as a musician. What was she like as a musician?
Well, you know, I kind of feel a little bit what Mike was saying. You know, she was just, it was, unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to play with her in an earlier period of her working career. But, you know, I was just amazed by, I would say, her insight into the process of preparing the music. I do remember one particular rehearsal we were doing in Los Angeles where, basically, she managed to pick out of a group of five or six singers, backup vocalists, exactly the note that was kind of not where it needed to be. And I, you know, since I didn't really work with Whitney before, to me it was just such an amazing thing that she could basically hone in the middle of this big band playing. There were strings, there was the bass, and the drums and guitars, and she picked out this one little note, you know, that was very I didn't hear it. But she knew exactly what she needed to find, and it was just, I thought that was an incredible sign of her professionalism and her musical insight. I mean, she was a genius, that's for sure.
This was a challenging tour in no small part because Whitney was having some difficulties with her voice.
I would say, I think Mike could get a little deeper into that.
You know, I'll tell you what. I've worked with lots of singers. I've worked with, even before Whitney, I'd worked with lots of singers, and I had the opportunity. Whitney, like anyone else, like any other singer on the planet who sings at the velocity and sings at that kind of, the way she sang. And she worked very hard when she sang. So it wasn't like, you know, I'm just going to get up here and, over a long period of years of singing like that, at that kind of level of intensity, you're going to have wear and tear on your voice. So my job at that point was to do everything in my ability to help her get through the shows. And, you know, it's just like an athlete who has a knee injury, who has a hip injury or a broken arm or an arm injury or anything. You know, you do what you can to, if the person is still able to perform, you do what you can and to make sure that, you know, you can have the performance that you want to get, and you know, obviously the person is going to have some kind of problems with their injury, but it's like a sports injury. It's just like, you know, but she gave it 100%, every single night, you know, whether she was on vocally or whether she was not on vocally. She gave it her all. She never let her audience sit out there, you know, standing out there. She never once said, oh, hey, look, guys, I can't sing tonight.
Mm-hmm.
She never canceled one night, you know.
Here's an email we had from Doug, who's a singer. I had constant sore throats when I was singing professionally. I never had surgery. I sucked on, lived on lozenges. I thought of Whitney Houston, Karen Carpenter, and Jerry Hadley, all dead from the stress of singing for a living, from having your instrument in your throat. And Matthew Garrison, you're not a singer, but you do come from a musical family. As mentioned, your dad played with John Coltrane. Yeah. And I wonder, had he given you any lessons about how to live your life on the road and the difficulties of being on tour all the time?
Actually not. He died quite young himself. He died at the age of 42, which is pretty shocking to me. But I had to learn it myself. And I think some of the things that I've come away with in my experiences working on, you know, in terms of traveling and, you know, the stress of traveling, it's one of the tougher parts. But I think more than anything, it's really what I've taken away from the experience is dealing with human relationships and how to handle that. That process has really been the core of my lesson, you know, in terms of doing all this work and all the traveling. So I wonder if Mike had some insight on that. I'd be kind of curious.
Mike?
I mean, yeah, I mean, you might refresh my memory about the question again, but...
About the difficulties of living life on the road and...
Yeah. With a big tour like ours...
Yeah, it was huge.
You know, and Matthew can tell you, you know, we travel with upwards about 80 people, maybe to 100 people.
Yeah.
And what we have is we have like these different pockets of people mm-hmm. that their job is specifically... You know, you have the tour management, then you'll have the people on the tour, then you'll have the band, and you'll have the riggers and people who do the staging and everything. And it's almost like a big family. A lot of times we try to hire a lot of the same people that we've known on past tours because we understand their work. And a large part of it has to do with Whitney. I mean, the very core of it has to do with the fact that, Whitney knew the back line people. She knew the people that were in the back doing the back of the stage work. She knew the people that were rigging. She knew who her stage managing were.
Yeah, you know, everybody had importance.
Everybody had importance to her. Yeah. She knew who the monitor guy was. And she remembered people's names and she was really, really, really sharp. Really sharp mm-hmm. person. So what we did is we took care of each other, basically. You know, when you're on the road, you got people, you know, you're traveling with these people for years. And so it's not like the first tour. It's a long time. We're traveling all together.
Yeah.
And we take care of each other. And we even with the new people that arrived, like with Matt, you know, Matt's treated like one of the family when he got on the tour. It's like, you know, you're one of the family. You're one of us. You know, we're all. You know, and it's like life on the road. It's a different kind of world.
Yeah, it's human interaction. Humans have to learn how to deal with each other.
But also with Whitney's tour, it was a very family-oriented tour. You know, a lot. You know, lots of kids, lots of babies, lots of children. You know, her mother would travel with us.
And of course, Sissy Houston, the great singer.
Sissy
herself,
Houston would. Yeah, I mean, Sissy Houston's traveling with us, and Sissy would often come up to me and say, you know, you guys wasn't hitting it tonight, or you guys sounded really great tonight. You know what I mean? And I always took that very seriously because it was Sissy Houston. So I was always afraid when Sissy would come around because I was wondering if we played too loud for Whitney or if we did something that wasn't right, she'd let you know about it. So
Michael Baker, thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah. No problem. Not at all.
Michael Baker, Whitney
Houston's talk to him, Mike.
Musical director, and saying goodbye to him. Also, Matthew Garrison, bass player who played on Whitney Houston's final world tour. He was at our bureau in New York. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we can't remember Whitney Houston without listening to her sing. Thank you. Whitney Houston, backed by the Georgia Mass Choir, from the soundtrack to the 1996 film The Preacher's Wife. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.